Hey, this is Scott Holt from Foghat, and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Hey, everybody, this is Joel Linter.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford.
The Rudy Sergeant.
Hey there, this is Steve Hackett.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph,
and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Coming at us, Scott Holt from Foghat. Oh, yeah. Catching up on this slow ride, taking you right into that city you just might be a fool for. We got to love our great rock and roll heritage. And hey there, Scott Holt. How you doing, man?
How you doing?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
Good. Very good, good, sir. Man.
I love it. Scott's even got the Foghat coffee cup there, coffee mug. Got to start the day
official,
right.
The official drink of Foghat. That's right.
That's right. I love it. Scott, of course, guitars and vocals for the great Foghat. And of course, Brother Shane right there. And I'm Dave.
How you doing?
Thanks for.
That's good to meet you guys.
You too, man. Thanks too. For doing the show. Sonic Mojo's the new record coming out. Of course, She's a Little Bit of Everything is the current jam that's out there. And it's got that old time sound, man. And loving it. You joined the band, I think, last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost 2 years in.
That's amazing, man. What's it been like to join one of the greatest, classic rock bands of all time, man? It's pretty freaking cool.
It's pretty freaking cool. That's exactly right. It's been quite a ride. You know, I've had a lot of fun. I've been friends with these guys for a few years, and we've worked together on some different projects. But to get a chance to front this band, to sing Slow Ride every night, you know, with Roger behind me banging the drums, it's a pretty cool experience. I'm real grateful for it.
Yeah, man.
Did they have to twist your arm, or is it a pretty simple decision for you when they asked?
They had to twist my arm to keep me away. They were like back off. We've got a singer. So I kept coming. They finally, Charlie retired, and I got the gig.
Nice, man. So to be around those guys, I mean, to be around that history, and of course, I mean, Roger just, you know, been there since the beginning. I mean, how cool is that? And then, like you said, you know, to have Slow Ride blasting that out every night. I mean, that's just like, it's got to be a pinch me moment, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm kind of a student of music history, you know, being my blues background, you know, and all that. And so realizing that you're part of this 50-year band, you know, that started in Savoy Brown and turned into Foghat, and they've put out, you know, this is our 17th album out. And so there's a tremendous legacy that you get to be a part of, and it's also a responsibility that you have to live up to, you know. But I'm just really honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. Awesome, man.
Just to go on the back history here of Foghat for a quick second, guitarist Lonesome Dave Peverett, bassist and vocalist Tony Stevens, and drummer Roger Earl were all at some point with Savoy Brown or other blues bands in the UK.
Right.
And they formed, are you a big fan of Kim Simmons, who we lost recently, and Savoy Brown? Like,
absolutely. I had the good fortune to become friends with Kim in the last several years. What a beautiful person, and just a great guitar player, and just a real inspiration to me. And he and Roger stayed friends. You know, they were friends right up until the end. In fact, that's how we got those Kim songs on the record. Roger asked him if he would write a song for us and record it with us. And so he wrote us four songs, but he wasn't able to live until he could record with us. So,
Man, to have, you know, that writing with him, I mean, what did that feel like? That had to be even extra special, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's being with Roger and Brian and Rodney is a real creative environment for me. I mean, we're constantly writing new material, and we're constantly, you know, I think we just kick each other in the pants and make each other play harder. And so that environment, just, you know, you can't help but be creative when you get around those guys.
Yeah.
Well, how are you approaching the challenge of stepping into Charlie's shoes and working with these guys and bringing your own style to the Foghat sound?
Yeah, I had to figure that out, because that was a trick. I'd never done anything like that before. You know, when I was in Buddy's band, I played guitar for Buddy, and he would make me sing, but I would sing in my own way. And then when I had my solo thing, it was all about me. getting in this band, I realized that there was a history and that I had to live up to that and try to bring my own self into it. So, you know, I'm not Dave. I can't sing like Dave. I can't play guitar like Dave. I'm not Charlie. I can't sing like Charlie. So I had to make peace with the fact that I'm going to come in and be Scott Holt in this band and figure out how to make that work, you know? So I, and you know, so far they've been patient with me and let me figure it out. And it's worked out, you know.
There's such a great groove and it's unique because it's a classic sound. It feels, but you can definitely hear your own voice too and playing. And, you know, I'm curious because with you playing kind of with Buddy Guy and having your American kind of blues background, and then, you know, there's the British bluesy background of Savoy Brown, and then kind of that all coming together. And does that feel like the crossroads in a way? No pun intended.
Yeah. I mean, because if you think about it, you know, all those guys, when they were growing up, they were listening to the same blues records that I listened to. The only difference was they were listening to stuff from across the ocean and I was listening to stuff from my backyard. So that immediacy, you know, and being in Buddy's band for 10 years, you know, the blues is in your face the whole time. Yeah. You're living it. And I, you know, I wanted to be a blues guy so bad when I first started. And I did all the classic stuff, man. I've slept on pool tables in clubs overnight, and I've done, you know, all that stuff. So I've experienced a lot of things that as a young musician fortified me and gave me some insight into it. And then you get with somebody like Roger, and he's a fan of the same music I am. And we both share a passion for Johnny Cash. So we're always singing lines from Johnny Cash songs to each other. But it's just, you know, music's universal. Everywhere I've ever been in the world, the one common ground would be music. You know, I've seen people in countries that where they don't even speak English singing the lines back to a song and not missing a word, you know. Wow. And that's a very powerful thing to see. Music can transcend every border. It can transcend every cultural limitation. Music is one of the most powerful forces that we experience here.
Yeah, totally.
I have to ask you this question because this is from my older brother. He's a huge blues fan, fanatic. He goes to all the festivals. He wanted to know what was it like playing with Buddy Guy, and you still keep in contact with him? You ever drop in on him?
Oh yeah.
How's he doing?
He's doing good, Buddy. I talked to Buddy a couple of days ago. You know, he's doing his farewell tour, and I think he might have overdid it just a little bit. They had to put a pause on the tour and let him rest up a little bit. He is 87 years old. But he's great. He was a great mentor to me. You know, I get asked a lot of times, you know, what's the biggest thing you learned from Buddy? And I can't answer it because I learned everything from him. I learned everything from how to play The Thrill Is Gone correctly to how to order in a Chinese restaurant to how to check into a hotel room to who T-Bone Walker was. So I learned everything. There's not one thing that I could narrow it down to, but yeah, he's doing really good. And he's a spry 87, man. It's an inspiration to me. I hope I get there.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic.
Oh man. Yeah, he does.
I went Strat shopping one day and I saw like his Buddy Guy's signature Strat. I'm like, I can't do that. I'm not ready. I can't.
You couldn't do the polka dots.
I mean, I tried to play it a little bit in the store. Then I'm like, okay, I gotta put this down. I can't, I'm not worthy of this.
Oh no, man. You're supposed to just hold it tighter.
Just hold it tighter. Right?
Yeah.
No. Next time. do you think like once he resumes, some of the shows, you think he might go out and do a jam with them? One last jam, you think?
I try to, every time I'm close enough to see him, I try to go see him. And he, a lot of times he'll call me up and let me play some with him. I'll play for Buddy anytime, anywhere, you know? Fortunately, you know, we're both pretty busy, so we don't cross paths as much as we'd like to. And I say fortunate because all musicians spent a couple of years where there was nothing going on. So it's good to be back to work. But yeah, anytime I can go see Buddy, I go see him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Have to ask you this is because it was such a big deal in January. Soul crushing, really. Your thoughts on Jeff Beck who we lost in 2023. What made Jeff so special to you as a bluesman and a guitarist, and was he an influence at all on your style? I know that he and Buddy were super tight.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Beck was not from this planet. You know, I mean, he's you know, I put Jimi Hendrix up here and then everybody else comes under Jimi Hendrix, but Jeff Beck's, you know, nipping at his heels. He was incredible. And if you listen to his entire catalog, you know, you start with the Yardbird stuff and even the first couple of Jeff Beck Group albums, that doesn't sound like the same guitar player that played, you know, the jazz fusion stuff in the 70s, or the guy that was in the poppier stuff in the 80s, or the guy that played the techno type stuff in the 90s, that he just reinvented playing the guitar. He played different guitars. He played them differently. He was just completely unique and just a one of a kind. There'll never be, he's one of those guys that there'll never be another one. You know, there'll never be another Buddy guy. There'll never be another Jeff Beck.
Yeah, I read a story, was that Jeff Beck, he kept dropping the pick a lot. So that's kind of why he went to just, you know, that classic, you know, plucking style. And yeah, it just, I mean, changed the game. I mean,
I got lucky enough a couple of times. I got lucky enough to be on the side of the stage watching him play, you know, that him and Buddy did some shows together. And nothing he does makes sense. You know, I mean, you as a guitar player, you're looking at it and you're like, well, that's not how you get that to sound like that. And he manipulated everything and just was, it was just beautiful to watch.
Yeah. To see those two guys, you see Buddy Guy and Jeff Beck and you're out, on the side of the stage. That's just, it doesn't get much better than that. Well,
doesn't, it really doesn't. The cool thing though with Buddy is that every guitar player that comes to Buddy becomes like me, just becomes a kid. It doesn't matter who it is. Clapton becomes a kid when he gets around Buddy. Carlos Santana becomes a kid when they get around Buddy, because they all acknowledge that Buddy's the master and you know, we're all just students.
Yeah. With the state of blues today, we've lost a ton of the original players at this point. Do you think we're building that back with younger guitarists, or do you think it's kind of impossible to reclaim where we were 20, 30 years ago, even at this point with blues?
I don't think so. I think the blues is always going to be there, because it's fundamental DNA. I mean, there's you take the blues out of the equation and there's nothing left, really. I mean, that's the foundation. Yeah. And there's some young people that are coming along that are doing some good stuff. And you know, I'm hoping that they'll be encouraged and nurtured and be successful so that they'll continue and inspire somebody else. That's the thing, is, you know, young kids have to be able to look up and see somebody playing the guitar and go, oh, I want to do that. And, you know, that positive influence is what, you know, we have to have to keep anything going, and especially the blues.
Yeah. And it's, you know, just blues being the bedrock too. I mean, the Foghat sound and so many others, I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, because blues is at that bedrock, it's you know, people feel it and they don't even know it sometimes, you know, especially some of these younger rock fans. And that's kind of a cool thing. It's like a package deal. Like, this is the foundation of it all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I tell people every night when I'm on stage, when we're introducing I Just Want to Make Love to You, it was written by Willie Dixon and it was originally recorded by Muddy Waters. I make sure and make those names, say those names out loud, because that's how you keep these artists alive, is by keeping their names in the universe and keep saying them. So I always talk about Junior Wells. I talk about Muddy. You know, Chuck Berry was a huge influence on Foghat, early Foghat.
Oh, yeah.
Their textbook seems to have been Chuck Berry songs and you know, the Chess stuff, the Willie Dixon stuff. And, you know, what a great recipe book to get your hands on, you know. And
yeah, totally.
Look at them now, 50 years later, people are still singing those songs and listening to them on the radio, and they're still being played on the radio because they're good songs. So,
yeah.
Do you encourage young kids to start with blues that want to learn rock and roll? Or I know a lot of kids jump right to metal because that's just the way kids are. They're, you know, it's aggressive, impulsive music.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants to go. You know, even I want to do that. I think blues is key. I think for guitar players, you need to start at Chuck Berry. You know, if if I came across a guitar player one time and I said, man, just play Chuck Berry. And he looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about. Like, dude, you got to find Chuck Berry. That's right. Required, you know? But yeah, I think the blues is a good way in, but you know, whatever music, you know, attracts you, that's, you know, go for it. You know, just play music. We need music, period. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about Sonic Mojo. I mean, the music, you know, you have those influences, you know, and of course Foghat has a sound, and, you know, fitting into that, like what was it like to kind of, you know, come in and fit into this existing sound, but also bring in your own thing and the writing as well? Like, what was that process like?
It was a process. It definitely was. I mean, it took me a while to figure it out. It was bumpy at the start, man. I was doubting myself. But you know, over time, you know, I found the parts of me that would work in this situation and the things that I had to do differently. And, you know, fortunately it's kind of worked out. It's taken me a while. I mean, I'm 2 years in and I'm just starting to get a little bit comfortable. About as comfortable as I want to be. you know, I just, the only reason I wanted to get comfortable is to make the show better, because, you know, that's what's important is we entertain the audience, and that's our job. You know, that's job number one. It's all about the music. And when people come to a Foghat show, I want them to leave wanting to come back and see a Foghat show again. And you got to make them have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Any of the songs from their vast catalog that you just love performing on stage? Do you guys switch it up? Do you change the style of the song, or you kind of keep to the original?
The catalog stuff, we kind of keep it to the original, because I think that's a responsibility. I think people come to the Foghat show, they don't want to hear your interpretation of Slow Ride. They're not interested in the jazz version of Slow Ride. They want to hear Slow Ride like it was coming out of the 8-track in their Camaro when they were driving to high school, you know? And so that's what we deliver to them. And you know, I try to, we don't have to work at it, but we keep that same enthusiasm and that same energy that the original four guys had, and you know, just bring it. So songs like that are just so much fun to play. I Just Want to Make Love to You and Slow Ride, but everything that we play, the catalog, you know, we were putting together the set for this year, and we were having trouble, you know, well, we can't play this song and this song because it makes the set too long, and everybody's arguing, oh, I don't want to take that song out, I like that one, well, I like that one. Finally I said, look guys, you know, we only got 90 minutes. I pointed at Roger and I said, and it's your fault. You got too many good songs and we can't play them all.
Does Roger talk about those early days? I mean, you know, I mean, does he have some crazy stories?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm a student. I love learning about music history and stuff like that. And I'm constantly, you know, interrogating him and when did you guys do this? And did you record at this studio? And how did you make this record? And he's always real free to talk. You know, he reminds me in that way a lot of Buddy, because Buddy was the same way. I used to just drive Buddy nuts asking him questions, and he never wouldn't answer me. He never wouldn't tell me you know, he answered every question I ever asked him. And Roger's like that, you know, from the most mundane things, like, you know, what day of the week did you cut this song on, you know? And he's always just real free with answering. So
it's kind of interesting that you said 8-track, because that could quite possibly be the best 70s 8-track song ever written.
Track song, because it probably had its own channel, you know. I mean, 8-track was the most miserable way to listen to music, especially if you only liked one song on the album, because then you had to wait, go all the way around before it could come back. But yeah, I bet I need to find a Foghat Live 8-track and see how they broke that up. On the, you know, because you got the four channels, you know, that have like two songs, and then it goes to the next one. Oh, see how they split that up.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, man, that's like so vintage, right, man? Yeah, I'd be so cool to find one of those. I wonder if 8-tracks would come back, right, Shane? Probably not. I know CDs have come back.
No, they came and went. They kind of, because exactly what Scott was saying is just. They split in the mid track, so you'll have a long track like Slow Ride, and it ends up breaking right down the middle. And then
it's terrible. Minutes. Yeah,
unbelievably stupid way to listen to music, but
it was the worst delivery system ever. You know.
Yeah. Have there been any gigs, you know, since you've been with the band? Like any places you played that are just like, you know, like sacred ground to you that like, oh man, you know, no, we're not just doing Foghat, we're playing here, you know, something like that?
I mean, every night I get to play with them, that stage becomes my favorite place that we've played every single night, because every single night we come out with this excitement and this energy, and every show, even if we play the same songs, every show is different because every show is a different audience. You're in a different place. You know, I always try to, when we get into the city that we're playing in, I like to get out and walk around and kind of get a vibe for where we are and try to, you know, feel what the locals are going through, you know, and what they're into. And that informs me during the show of how I'm going to approach the audience and how we're going to present ourselves. And then it's just, you know, the stage in and of itself, the idea of the stage is a sacred spot. You know, I mean, it's something that has to be honored and respected.
Yeah. This is like it's kind of a dead horse at this point because it's been talked about so much, but I had to ask. I mean, there's a lot of bands right now. I kind of feel like they're disrespecting the genre of blues and rock. A lot of bands are using tapes and backing tracks and things and not even playing, according to some other members, aren't not even playing their own instruments live. Do you have any thoughts? I mean, on that from a, I kind of see you guys as the genuine article and where you're coming from with Buddy, the real deal. What are your thoughts on artists that just get up on stage and push play?
Well, honestly, the only thing I could say about that is I don't understand why you would want to put yourself through that. I mean, if you're going to get on a stage, but you're not going to do anything, I can think of other things to do. You know, if you're not going to let me play my guitar and sing, you know, I got other stuff I can go do. I think if it's for the audience's sake, if you're trying to recreate something for the audience, I think that's a mistake too, because I think the audience is smarter than that. You know what I mean? They know whether they care or not. It depends on who you've cultivated as your audience. But I think, you know, you got to give the audience credit. They know if you're bullshitting or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then what's the other kind of the latest chapters, you know, you sort of the AI stuff, right? You know, that's happening now. Gosh. Does that kind of freak you out?
Not really, because I take comfort in the words of Joe Walsh. He said, AI won't take over rock and roll because they can't destroy a hotel room. And he's right.
That's right.
I love Joe.
I love that. That's right. Yeah. And I worry, too, just about, like, the heart and soul of playing music. Like, I mean, there's nothing like, you know, I mean, I just started playing guitar again, like, after a while, you know, 6 months. I started playing within 6 months. The last 6 months after, you know, kind of just being too busy and not playing. And there's nothing like doing that and just playing your, you know, learning your way, you know, yeah. and learning your way through it. And you can never take that passion, you know, away, you know, right? No. I mean, that human factor, that emotion.
No, you can't, and you can't fake it either. I mean, it's right. You know, you feel it when the real thing's happening, you feel it. Guitar is for me has always been equal parts therapy and release, you know.
Right.
When I'm having a bad day or something, picking up a guitar makes it better. You know, when I'm having a great day, picking up a guitar makes it even better. It's a way of communicating that when you can't convey it any other way, you know, get on your guitar but it'll always be there for you. That's the cool thing about it. Don't put it down, man, because it'll always be there for you and you know, it's always yours, you know.
Right, right. Amen.
From the blues side, what would you consider to be the most groundbreaking or the most important blues album in your life? I hate putting you on the spot.
Yeah, but man, that's woo, what are you gonna say? Gosh, I don't know. I mean, there's so many great blues records. There's certainly records that influence me. To narrow it down to the one most important record, I don't know that you could do that. I mean, you know, Live at the Regal is a huge influence on me, but so is the Robert Johnson albums that were released, you know, in the early 60s. So is Muddy Waters' Greatest Hits, but so is the Muddy Waters records that Johnny Winter produced. Buddy Guy's Stone Crazy album is one of my favorites, but so is Drinking TNT and Smoking Dynamite with Junior Wells. So, I mean, it just, you know, to that's the hardest thing about like Desert Island lists. And, you know, if you could only take five records with you,
yeah,
you know, that's going to change every 5 minutes with me, man. I'm not a good guy for narrowing stuff down. I don't understand why we can't have it all.
Right.
Well, that's the thing about blues is there's so many different, there's so many variations and they're all, and there's just so many good albums.
Yeah. You know? And it can depend on what mood you're in. Like, you know, certain times of the day, I want to listen to BB King. Other times of the day, I want to listen to Hound Dog Taylor. And you don't get those two guys confused. They don't sound anything alike. And, but they do serve their purpose, you know?
Yeah. Is it amazing too, like when you listen to a record, I mean, every now and then I'll put on like Sirius XM because there's so many, I mean, there's compression, which is kind of, you know, one thing you got to deal with, but like, there's so many different eras and, you know, just for blues alone, you could divide it up in so many different channels, like some channels. And,
exactly.
And that's how cool it is. I mean, you can go straight back to like the early 50s. You can go back to, I mean, it just, it, the way you can just pinpoint what you might be feeling is, or just let it play, you know, it's just, it's surreal, you know?
I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times when I'm at home, I just rifle from one to the next, you know, and it could be John Lee Hooker, and then it could be Stevie Ray Vaughan, and then it could be, you know, whoever. And it just, it never gets old. I mean, I'm obviously a blues head, you know, that's where I come from. That's what I grew up listening to. But it, to me, it's the most sensible, logical music that exists, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally.
So what's next for you, Scott? You know, you guys you're going to be touring this. And then are you working on anything by yourself right now with the guys or on the side?
Right now I'm pretty focused on Foghat. You know, I want to do this. And, you know, I'm hoping that we'll, you know, after the first of the year, we'll start kind of pecking around. I'm going to try to nudge him into doing another record next year and see if I can do that without our manager getting mad at me. Cause it's a lot of work for her, but, it's, you know, I love this band. I love this group of people. I mean, everybody, the crew, the office staff, everybody is amazing. I love this point in my career, this point in my life. I mean, I'm grateful, you know, my wife and my daughter are healthy and here with me. And, I get to do what I love doing and do it in front of a bunch of people. And it's just a real honor. I'm just really grateful.
And that's, you got to know too that, yeah, and you got to know that you made an instant classic with Sonic Mojo, right? I mean, it's like, does that, I'm sure you guys felt that, like, you know, when it was done, and like, how does that feel? Like you're on an instant classic Foghat album right there. Like, that's got to feel pretty. I mean, it's all there, man.
It's great. Like, it's great.
Thank you. Groovy. It's got, yeah.
We're real proud of it. I mean, we obviously, you know, when you make a record, you're living with it for 2 or 3 months before anybody else gets to hear it. And that's been the case with us. And, you know, we've gone back and forth about sequencing the tracks and all that stuff. So you're listening to it constantly. And I just love the record. I love the songs that we chose. I love the performances that we got. You know, Roger was basically playing the whole record with one bad arm. I mean, he had something with his shoulder. I don't know if it was his bicep or something, but, he, you know, he would be just in tremendous pain, but we would play just until he just said, I got to stop. And then the next day we're doing it again. And when you listen to this record, think about that. Cause like there's songs like I Don't Appreciate You where he's doing these press rolls and like the first time through, he does one, the second verse, he does two, the last verse, there's like eight. And it's just like, it's almost like him telling my arm, I'll show you, we'll do even more.
Wow.
And so he's an amazing person. Just, you know, God took some extra time building him because he built him fast.
That's right. He's a machine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
This business is so hard on, I mean, Joey Kramer, Aerosmith, he's sidelined right now. Larry Mullen Jr., you know.
You too, surgery.
Yeah. Me too, same thing. I mean, how old is Roger?
Roger's 77.
70, wow.
Yeah,
I know we've talked to numerous drummers and a lot of them try to refine their style so they're not pounding as hard, so it's not as hard on their body. Is he a pretty hard drummer, or is he pretty relaxed?
I tell you what, our stage volume starts with the drums. Okay. If you've ever seen a Foghat stage, there's two Marshall stacks on Roger's left. There's two Marshall stacks on Roger's right, and he's in the middle. And, you know, the stage volume is very healthy because only our bass player uses in-ears. Everybody else is using monitors. Mm-hmm. And we'll have the sound guy come up and go, guys, you're really loud. And I just point at Roger and go, well, it starts with him. You know, you got to I don't see how you're going to do that. So yeah, he's still just cracking just as hard. You know, I mean, of course I love it. I like it loud. So for me, it works great, but yeah, he's an inspiration, man. He does not compromise and he doesn't let up. You know, we're every time we play a show, it's 100% full on.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're just the physicality of that instrument and he's still going strong. And it's awesome, man.
Rock and roll is a full contact sport, that's for sure.
Damn right.
Right. That's right. Amen to that, brother. Amen.
I got to ask you, I'm in Philly, Dave's in Detroit. It's a two-city podcast. Who are the best fans?
that's a question to get me in trouble.
That's okay.
Foghat fans, how about that?
Nice.
You know, man, I've had opportunity to play all over the world, and I've talked about this a lot. For some reason, fans overseas seem more appreciative of the music. That doesn't mean that they're better fans. It's just how they receive it, how they accept your performance. You go to Europe or you go to Japan and they're just, it's just a different vibe in how they're accepting the music and how much they're respecting it. And I think part of that is because as Americans, it's all right here in our backyards. I mean, you know, you're in Detroit. I've been to Detroit a bunch of times. There's plenty of bars and clubs and taverns.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And there used to be a place called Calhoun's that I used to play there a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fans were great, but it was a different vibe. You know, it was not like when you play for an audience that's just, you know, in rapt attention. So, you know, I think people that come out to live music venues these days, they're the best fans, because that's what we need, is people in, you know, coming to the venues. So that's, you know, the best answer I can give you for that without trying to get my head chopped off.
Are there any, I mean, between, like, you know, Detroit and Philly, I mean, there's, like, you know, so many different sounds and influences over the years. I mean, were there any of those Philly bands that grabbed you, or any Detroit kind of groups that grabbed you, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, Detroit, you know, everybody from MC5 to George Clinton, you know, I was getting all that stuff, you know, and then of course all the Motown stuff, and then Philly, you know, the sounds of Philadelphia, you know, all that great music, the OJs and stuff like that. I'm a fan of all of that stuff, you know, and I have good memories of playing in both those places. In Philly, we played a place when I was with Buddy called Chestnut Cabaret. I don't think it's there anymore. This is back in the 90s. And I remember we played there one night till about, I think we stopped at like 1 a.m. and then we had to get on a plane at like 4 to fly to Austin to do Austin City Limits. So wow. it was like, oh man, this is the blues for real now.
Yeah, but, that's right. Yeah,
I've got great memories and I love both those cities very much.
That's awesome.
How much do we owe Buddy for pretty much everything, Buddy guy?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any guitar players these days that don't have some kind of Buddy guy in their system, you know. There's some great footage on YouTube of Jimi Hendrix sitting in the front row at a Buddy guy show. Yeah. And then that's, you know, that speaks volumes to me. Jimmy Hendrix thought enough of Buddy to listen to him. You know, everybody should, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal, right? That kind of says it all. It really does. You know, like talking about.
I don't know what I would do if Jimi Hendrix was sitting in the front row of me playing. I'd be like staggered, you know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Does that ever happen when you're playing and you look down, you see somebody and you're just like, oh, shit, that's one of my idols. I'm sure that they've been there. I mean, I'm sure everybody's been at Buddy's shows.
We did a show in London one time at a place called Shepherd's Bush, the Empire in Shepherd's Bush. And Buddy would, you know, about halfway through the show, Buddy would say, tell me to sing one. And so I would go up and sing, you know, whatever. And so this particular night I go up and I'm singing Red House, the Jimi Hendrix song. And I hear this crackling and popping behind me. And I'm like, oh man, what are they doing? They're messing with the gear or something. And I turn around and Eric Clapton is plugged in. And oh, so geez. Eric Clapton and Buddy Guy are playing rhythm guitar for me while I'm singing Red House. And so that was a pretty weird.
My hair standing up.
Oh, dude, it was mine went completely away.
Been like that ever since. No.
Been like that ever since, man.
I mean, that's like holy crap. I mean, what's Eric Clapton? What's he like to be? I mean, to be on the stage with him, and then to just what's he like? Any interaction with him, like either like after the show or just? I mean, what's he?
Yeah, I mean, for that particular show, he came to the show. I didn't think he was going to come. He came to the show, and he's sitting in the dressing room with us. And if I remember right, we were just kind of sitting in a circle, and we ended up talking about fishing, I think. It was just, you know, you're kind of trying not to just stare at him like he's an alien,
right.
You know, and fan out all over him. But he was, you know, he was just kind of a quiet, gracious guy. And then he sat on the side of the stage to watch the show, and I didn't have any idea that he was going to play. And then he got up and sat in with us, and it was just like, it was crazy. I rushed back to the hotel and called my wife and woke her up to tell her what
yeah,
up to that evening.
Oh man, that's the coolest.
The Stones have a new record coming out very shortly, Hackney Diamonds. Does it still excite you to see that they're still out there getting it done?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's another band. I think Roger likes them as much as I do. I love the Stones, yeah. And they're an inspiration. I mean, they're still going and they're still making new music. And you know, the last Stones show I was at was I think in 2015, and it was great. I mean, you know, they did exactly what you want a rock and roll band to do. They rocked the place for 2 hours and it was amazing.
Yeah.
They're just a fantastic band.
Did you hear the Lady Gaga song yet?
I did. And Stevie Wonder's playing on that too.
Hey, great. Crazy?
Oh, man, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And the first song that they released, Angry, you know, with Keith playing the intro, and that's the Stones right there. And
the riff, and oh man.
Yeah. And Steve Jordan, you know, they could have gotten nobody better to fill Charlie Watts's position than Steve Jordan, because that band was really a Charlie Watts band. I mean, most good rock bands are drummer bands, you know, Foghat's a drummer band, you know, that as long as Roger's there, it's Foghat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw, I think I saw the same Stones tour. My first and last time I saw them was the No Filter. I think it was like 2015 tour. It was like Charlie's last tour when he came to Philly. I was down there at the time. It was an amazing show. And I mean, just that timeless groove, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I was checking out some of that expensive Winos projects. I know that's what Steve Jordan was kind of, that's where he connected, I think, and at least at one of many points with Keith. And you just can't beat that, man. I mean,
that's gold. That's pro ball right there, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Right. That's right. It's like, that's the big leaguers right there. Yeah. Oh, man. All the way.
And so Talk Is Cheap is probably one of my top 10 albums of all time.
I love that. It was love that.
Steven. So it's flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Just tones, man. Tones. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
But they were such excellent missionaries for the blues. You know, I mean, that's part of why they're still around and why they still sound the way they do. Is, you know, they never got away from what brought them here, you know. I mean, that's the celebration of American music, which is what Foghat's been about for 50 years, drawing from, you know, the blues and the country stuff and R&B. You know, you it's the perfect formula. You can't beat that, and you can't fake it.
That's right.
Yeah, I actually had a friend not too long ago. I had to inform him that he actually thought Foghat was an American band.
Well, most of their career has been over here. So it's you know, it's not too far fetched.
Yeah.
But they you're right. They did do American music better than anybody, man. That's awesome. That's
See,
right.
Now they've hired a hillbilly singer. So what do you know now? A Tennessee boy.
Well, Scott, this has been awesome, man. I mean, anything else you'd like to add, man? You guys are about to hit the road. You guys have a new round of shows coming up, I think, right?
For yeah, October? We're going to hit the road. We're leaving. I'm leaving like tomorrow, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just ongoing. It's the Road Fever 2023 tour until the end of the year, and then we'll decide what we're going to call the tour next year and get started. And I'm just loving it, man. And I look forward to seeing everybody out there on the road. And I hope they enjoy the new record.
Yes. Absolutely. It's great having you back, man.
Man, thank y'all for taking time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I really appreciate you.
Yeah.